What is your name?
Jeffrey Boyle.
What church do you pastor?
Two, Grace Lutheran and Trinity Lutheran here in Wichita.
And where are those churches located?
Grace is at 3310 East Pawnee, on the south side of Wichita, and then Trinity is at 611 South Erie Street.
And how long have you pastored these congregations?
Next month it'll be 9 years.
And have you pastored elsewhere?
No.
Okay. What are the congregation sizes of these two churches?
They're both roughly the same. We have at each of them somewhere between, I'd say, 60 and 70 people that come every Sunday. And as far as what's on the books, it's probably closer to 130 at one and 180 at the other.
Okay. What are the congregation's demographics? Do you have Hispanic services?
Mm-hmm.
Do you have large youth groups?
So at Grace, we do have a Hispanic ministry, so we have every Sunday a divine service in Spanish, where we have typically between 5 and 10 people that come to that. It's fairly small. And of those that do come, two of them know English fairly well, and 3 to 5 of them don't know it at all, so it's entirely in Spanish. As far as the English services go, I would say it's mostly white, mostly older. We do have some of African American descent. We do have some from Mexican descent or other Hispanic countries. I would say in general, our demographic is a fairly older age. We do have more and more younger families that are coming and joining, and more babies are coming forth, and that's been a wonderful thing. We've had a few baptisms recently and another one coming next month, so I would say we are gradually lowering our age demographic.
Okay. What makes the LCMS faith or your specific congregations unique? What draws people to the congregation or to the church at large?
Sure. I'd say within the LCMS community here in Wichita in particular, my two congregations are probably unique in their liturgical form of worship. I mean, we tend to use what the hymnal has given us in as rich and full a way as we can. So we do have quite a bit more of the ceremonial side than I think what you would find in other LCMS churches around here. And some people are just drawn to that. Some people have resonated with why we do what we do, and we are very adamant to teach why we do what we do. And so when that's the case, not everyone likes it. But as people come to know maybe fuller in a fuller way what our confessions actually do uphold, and they tend to resonate with the way that gets expressed in the liturgy.
What kind of community engagement is your church involved in? Do you have any outreach programs? And how are new members reached? And is there an education program for them?
Sure. A number of things, and each church does slightly different things. Like at Grace, we have a food pantry. That Grace is being located on the south side, right across from one of the poorest neighborhoods here in Wichita. And so we have a number of people that do come in off the street, and one of the things that our church, being a fairly lower, let's say it's got a lower budget than many other churches, and so we just don't have a lot of cash, and so when people come in, we say we can't actually give you money for either the gas or housing or whatever it is, but we do have a food pantry, and so we have every Tuesday from 9 till 11, people come in regularly for food, and it's been a wonderful outreach and opportunity. It has not translated into a number of members, but that's also not why we started it. We started it because there is an area that needs this human care and this mercy. And so we've been operating this food pantry for years, and it's through the donation of various churches, individuals, it's been able to carry on. There have been maybe two people that I know of that have ended up joining the church at some point through this food pantry. But for the most part, it's simply an outreach. We also have a clothing giveaway. We have service at the Lord's Diner. This is largely focused on this poorer area here in Wichita. Another thing that that Trinity has really gotten involved with, and Grace in part has come along with it, is Family Promise, which is a wonderful outreach towards the homeless and homeless families. And so I actually found out about this largely through Father Aaron Warwick at St. Mary's Orthodox. He came and spoke to our council about this. And what it is it's a organization where you have hosting churches that will take a family for 1 week every quarter of the year, and take up to three families, where you have children and adults that share, that, you know, each have their own room, and a host church will keep them overnight and have staff that provide food and so forth, and shelter. And through a system of churches, a network of churches, they will be able to go to a different place each week. And they have a day house during the day. So our churches have come along as an assisting congregation to help supply food and extra people to care for that week. And that's been a great opportunity. We also serve at the Labor Finders, a day labor place right around the corner from here, trying to keep a neighborhood outreach alive there. We have other things that do try to bring people in. We've got a neighborhood fall festival here at Trinity every year. And we have a lot of our neighbors that come in. It's a way of having a fun time, fostering kind of a neighborhood neighborhood joy and community that way, but also inviting people to our church, giving them little catechisms that we put in all their bags and invite them to when our service times are and that sort of thing. We do offer new member classes fairly regularly. Right now I've got 4 people going through that, and so it's just, as people come in and are interested and they end up visiting for a while, we'll end up setting up a class and going through the catechism that way.
Okay. Do you have a children education program?
We do have a Sunday school at Trinity especially, and Grace is looking to start that. Grace has not had that very strongly because with an 8 a.m. service, it's a bit more difficult for that kind of age of kids to come. Trinity's had just a bit more, and so during the 9:30 Bible study hour, we do have a Sunday school. We do not have any focused middle or high school or older sort of classes. We do have every Wednesday during the school year, roughly September through June, youth catechesis. So I'll teach that, and we have everywhere from 3-year-olds up until some in high school that come. And it's been a great opportunity to continue that education and that growth.
Where have you received your education?
I did my undergraduate at the University of Michigan, and then I went to seminary at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne. While there, they have an exchange program, so I actually went to Cambridge and studied at Westfield House for a year. And then I did my PhD through the University of Toronto.
And how, outside of the university, how do you continue your education?
Well, I did just finish the PhD, and so there's that. I've done various continuing education courses, though, which has been a great opportunity. These pop up sporadically throughout the country, but I went to a continuing ed week-long course in Albuquerque, New Mexico for every year for about 8 years or so, and that was a great opportunity. We have some of those here in Kansas. We also have every year a pre-Lent retreat for all the pastors in the Kansas district where a professor from the seminary comes, and that's a great opportunity. We have an annual pastors conference or a Kansas district church workers conference. I've presented a paper there every year for the last 8 or 9 years, and so that's been a great opportunity to continue that way. And then finally, we did start a book club, Pastor Philippek and I, 9 years ago, where we read a book every month and discuss it together. And we've been submitting those book lists or syllabi to the seminary, and they actually have recognized it as a continuing education opportunity. So every pastor that goes through that can obtain, I think it's 2 credits a year from the seminary for that, which is a great continuing ed opportunity to just keep reading and discussing it with other pastors.
Okay. Do you see your ministry or the church changing, growing, or modernizing now, or do you see any change in the near future?
You know, if anything, I see our cultural demands right now presenting it in such a way that the church needs to be the church. And so all the more, I would say, with such a, I mean, I don't want to say it's a collapse, but it's not far from it. I mean, there's just so many tensions right now in the culture that what the church needs to be doing is providing a stable place that's not going anywhere, where families are collapsing, where ideas are just all over the place, and the church needs to be a place where people can come and find that it's not going anywhere. And so, if anything, I think it's more encouragement to continue to uphold a true confession, a beautiful liturgy, and encouraging folks in this life that is gathered around what is good. And so, so I don't see us trying to chase the culture that way. I see us trying to continue to be who we are, and as the culture continues to kind of crumble around us, folks are going to come to the high place, and that's going to be the church.
And now on to the eighth day question.
Yes.
How and when were you introduced to eighth day books, and how and when were you introduced to the Eighth Day Institute?
Interestingly, in an indirect way, and unknowingly, I was introduced to Eighth Day books while I was on my vicarage at St. John Lutheran Church in Wheaton, Illinois. We had received a catalog from them. The pastors had apparently in years past ordered books from this catalog, and it was a very famous catalog that Warren Farha ran for years. We had it at the church there, and one day the pastor came in and threw the catalog on my desk and said, "Vicar, what do you want?" And so I went through and circled a number of books that I thought would be wonderful and figured if I got them, great. If not, no sweat. Well, I got all those books. It was wonderful, and it was a great catalog. I mean, this catalog had not only just books in there, but it had little stories about them, reviews about them, quotes from them, and it was hand-selected and just trying to uphold what really are great books, a bookstore unlike any other. Well, I had no idea that was in Wichita, so when I first came to Wichita, it was Pastor Cliff Winter, who's a member of, at Trinity, and as we got to know each other, he said fairly early on, "Hey, there's this great bookstore right up the road that you're going to love." And so he showed it to me. I went, and it was amazing. And it's right on the same street as I live on, so it's Erie, just north of Kellogg. And so it's now become a place we go there regularly. Our kids are they love it there. We'll go up on Saturdays, ride our bikes. And so I've been going there consistently since I came in 2010. Got to know Warren Farha well, and Victoria, and a number of the other workers there, and it's just been a great place, a home away from home.
The Eighth Day Institute.
Oh, the Eighth Day Institute. So I came into contact with that by going to the bookstore, and I saw a flyer, and it must have been December of 2010. My wife and kids were back in Michigan because through various tragic circumstance with one of my wife's roommates, and so they went back, and I had some extra time, and so I was at the bookstore, and I saw this flyer for a Christmas feast for the Eighth Day Institute. So I asked what that was, and was introduced to the ladder right next door, the headquarters for the Eighth Day Institute, and that was my first encounter with the Institute. Loved it. Ended up getting involved with Hall of Men, which is a gathering that meets on the second and fourth Thursdays at 7:30 for a meal. There's at 8:30 a little convocation where you've got the Nicene Creed, the Lord's Prayer, a hymn, and a scripture reading, and a reading from a church father, and then there's an informal, formal toast to one of the heroes of the faith, and guys gather around and listen, learn, discuss, you know, have just great friendships that are formed. And so I was involved with the Hall of Men starting really in 2011, and have been involved with it. I've presented, I don't know, a dozen times probably, various heroes of the faith. I've presented at various symposium. I was just the keynote speaker for the so-called Protestant side of the Florovsky Week, which is an annual academic conference, although it's not purely academic. It's just on a maybe more highly intellectual side of their offerings. And so that was a great opportunity to discuss with a Catholic, a Roman, Eastern Orthodox, and a Lutheran, but Protestant voice, all addressing. This year it was the papacy, the Bible, and councils. What's the authority for the church? So I've been involved in that way, just presenting, attending, but then I also served as the vice president for the Institute and as a board member before that. And I don't know if it was for 5 years or 6 years, but it was for a good chunk of time that it was on the board. And I came off the board just the end of 2018, largely so that I could focus on finishing my dissertation, because I needed to get that done in the spring. So,
you've already covered this quite a bit. Can mm-hmm. you give us a sampling of the topics that are discussed?
Oh, sure. Well, so at the Hall of Men, for instance, some of those that I've presented were someone like Reverend Childs, who is a Presbyterian, he's since deceased, but a Presbyterian biblical exegete from Yale University, happens to have been the doctor father for my doctor father, so I call him my doctor grandfather. But so there's people like that, Cyril of Alexandria I've presented on, St. Michael or Job, you know, some of these biblical figures, Jeremiah I've presented, and there's just a number of people. This year I'm actually going to be presenting on ACP, Arthur Carl Peepcorn, who was a professor at the St. Louis Seminary in the late 50s through early 70s when he died. So you get a number of these figures. You have also at this symposium level, you have topics that are covered. Wonder, you know, you have topics of culture, you have topics of, you know, we had Peter Leithart come in to talk about Constantine and the Constantinian culture and that sort of thing, and how do we engage culture that way from a very intentional Christian point of view. I did talk about Florovsky Week the year before. It was on justification, and next year it'll be on baptism. So you get some of these. The idea is really that we are going to be an ecumenical organization that is not at the lowest common denominator. It recognizes there are differences, and we, rather than brushing those aside, we want to take them head on and say, you know, we want each community to be most rooted in its community so that we could have a real dialogue over the issues. So I've really appreciated that.
How do 8-Day Books advertise their products to you, and how does the 8-Day Institute advertise its programs?
Sure. Well, 8-Day Institute, I'll start with that. They have a website, a great website, and it's actually just been revamped and makes it very easily accessible to just pass that on. I'd say both of them most effectively are advertising by word of mouth, by people that are coming to the events, coming to the bookstore, and they encounter something that is very different and I think very good. And so we'll bring that in. It's that word of mouth that's the most convincing form of advertising. But we advertise for the Institute in our monthly newsletter at our churches. You see it on Facebook for both of them. You get mailings occasionally from each, when especially the annual sale at 8-Day Books, you know, you'll get a flyer. And, but it's mainly through word of mouth, I think, is at least most effective for the enduring customer.
Okay. Have you met any people through these organizations that have affected you professionally?
Yeah, I'm not quite sure how to answer it affected me professionally, and as far as by serving in the church, it's not like I'm looking for other jobs or anything like that. But they have affected me, I'd say primarily personally. I've developed great friendships. And just a quick anecdote to that is, for instance, 2 days ago, I was going to the bookstore to pick up a baptismal card so I could send it to a godson of mine. I pull up, and as I'm pulling in and getting out of my car, I see a good friend of mine who's the headmaster at Christ the Savior Academy, which is at St. George, which is where my wife works and all five of my kids go. So we've got a strong connection there, and so I see Galen and I say hi to him, and he's got two folks with him, one a monk from New Mexico and the other a deacon who is to be ordained a priest the next day. And so they were both with him, and he was showing them the bookstore. And I, having been a board member and an active member at the Institute, have a key. And so I said, well, have you shown them the ladder? And they said, oh, no. And I said, well, so we walked in the ladder. Loved, you know, these two guests loved it. And so here we're able to have this conversation, meet new people, reconnect with old friends. After that, I go into the bookstore, and there's about a half dozen people. The guy that's buying a book is a good friend. Chris Kettler teaches at Friends University, so we talk for a while. Warren Farha's behind the counter. You've got Lucy, one of the newer employees that I've been able to connect with, and know her sister and her father that works there. So it's just friendships get formed, and you actually get to walk into a place, and it is kind of like home. There's this joy that gets to be shared there. I would say with Chris Kettler is another example of a professional help. He's someone that has been a longtime teacher at Friends and has given me encouragement in terms of my own writing, the presentation I gave at Florovsky. He was very adamant that I should seek to get that published. I've developed friendships with Matt Umberger, who's a professor at Newman University, and a few others that just through this community have helped to shape thinking and maybe academic pursuits beyond maybe the career side of things.
Where are, for the 8th Day Institute, where are gatherings held? How often are these gatherings, and what is their average attendance?
Sure. Well, starting with the Hall of Men, that is probably the most regular, and then with that, because that's twice a month, Sisters of Sophia is once a month, and that's for the women, and it's largely a similar structure. Those are all held at the Ladder, which is located immediately next to, west of 8th Day Books. Those are held, like I said, twice a month for the Hall of Men, 7:30, and guys go home whenever they go home, sometimes after midnight, but we typically try to be done with the actual formal side around 10. Sisters of Sophia is once a month on a third Tuesday, I believe, and that's roughly 6:30 until, I don't know, 9 or so. And then you also have feasts and festivals. So sometimes they will have a Christmas feast or St. John of Damascus award banquet, and these things, St. Patrick's feast also. St. Patrick's is typically held at the Ladder, but the Christmas feast rotates through churches. So we've hosted it at Trinity. It's been at there's a Charismatic Episcopal Church, Resurrection up on the north side by Bel Air. They had it last year, and so there's a number of places where these things can be held. They're trying to incorporate churches into their their offerings. There's an Inklings Festival, which is held at the Ladder and outside, and that's been a great opportunity for families to gather. We often have symposium at St. George in the Fellowship Hall there, and last year was at St. Mary's because St. George was undergoing construction. I think most of the offerings, though, are held at the Ladder, the bookstore, churches, St. George being a primary spot.
What are the demographics of the members? Are they mostly Orthodox? Are they mostly...
Surprisingly, they're mostly Protestant.
Really?
The vast majority of attendees at things like Symposium, Hall of Men, are not just Protestant, but it seems non-denominational. I mean, there is a strong interest, I would say, in the Protestant world towards these things that are different. Holy, icons, theology, I mean, just pushing some of the sacramental side. There are, of course, the Orthodox and Catholics and Lutherans that attend these things, but the primary attendee is going to be some evangelical.
Okay. More questions.
Mm-hmm.
Very broad question. How have you been involved with St. George Orthodox Cathedral? You say your children go there,
yeah,
and your wife works there. Have you been involved in other ways?
Sure. It's a community that I've become very close with. Father Joshua was a very good friend. He was their assistant priest for a while, and I've gotten to know Father Paul quite well, and I'd say through the school primarily, but through friendships through Eighth Day Institute, it has been a consistent... Sorry about that. It's been a consistent connection there that and a friendship that's developed. The school side of it, though, has been primarily how we've been so involved with that church. I do attend their Pascha service as much as I'm able to. In fact, I've taken some of our high school youth just so that they could see what that service is like, and then we've talked about it afterwards. I've taken our kids to it. It really is remarkable, and the community has been very welcoming and encouraging to us.
And last question. Do you have anything else to say about the Institute, the bookstore, or St. George at large?
I'd say sign up as an 8-day member, and I would say go to the bookstore as often as you can, and that St. George has been, I think, a constant pillar of an encourager of the Christian life here in Wichita, that I think all our churches should seek to emulate and have that same sort of stability for the sake of Wichita. And that's one of the nice things is at St. George, you know, it's just not going anywhere. It's been there for over 100 years. Not always in its present form, but it brings a beauty, a consistency, a truth, and a goodness to Wichita that I think is very good. And the fact that they are very open to having these conversations, even befriending a Lutheran pastor, where I can be fully Lutheran and they can be fully Orthodox, and we can have a great friendship that way.
Okay. All right, well, that's it.
Wonderful.
Thank you.
No problem.